Today's program is brought to you by Cain Vineyard and Winery, a Napa Valley winery committed to respecting the soil and dedicated to the creation of three Cabernet blends. For more information, visit cain5.com.
I'm Greg Blaze, host of Cutting the Curd. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to Cooking Issues. This is Dave Arnold, your host of Cooking Issues, coming to you live every Tuesday from roughly 12 to roughly 12:45, 12:50 on the Heritage Radio Network in Bushwick, Brooklyn. Joined, as usual, with Nastasia the Hammer Lopez, Jack in the booth, and special guest star on today's show, Nick Wong. How you doing, Nick? You have to talk into the mic. He's just going to sit there and he's going to shake his head. So Nick's special mode of being guest is just going to be to lean back and go, you can't see it, but imagine someone looking back and closing their eyes almost, not 100%, just back and forth. No. Anyways, so Nick was, originally we met him at the French Culinary Institute. He was one of the tech interns, then went to work at Sambar. How long did you work at Sambar? The first time. Nick, you're killing me, brother. 2 years. And then for some reason, Where did you go? Then Gramercy or something like this? And then he went out. Where the hell did you go? You went to Chris Constantino's place, Encanto. The no longer extant Encanto. Chris has a new restaurant. And now, for some reason that escapes us, he's back at Sambar. Right? Right, Stas?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Listeners have no way of knowing if this guy's really in the studio.
Yeah, I know. He's being a
big You could be making him up. It's like an imaginary friend, you know?
You know what? He's going to have an imaginary lunch after this. Have like imaginary pizza, and then he will then become my imaginary friend.
The imaginary pie here is not that good also.
Oh, calling out their imaginary pie.
I am.
What varieties of imaginary pie do they have here?
There are a few.
Yeah? Yeah, they have pecan pie? Or a pecan? We already went through this on the air. Pecan or pecan?
Oh, pecan.
Pecan, because we're northerners. I think if you're from the south, isn't it pecan if you're from the... No. Or is it the other way around? Is it pecan if you're from the north and pecan if you're from the south? But we've had this discussion, and I'll have it till the day I die. Goop or nuts? Goop or nuts? Jack, goop or nuts?
I don't even know what that question is.
The hell? Do you not eat pecan pie? Stas?
Oh, goop or nuts.
Nuts?
I don't like it.
Any variety of pecan pie? You don't like any variety of pecan pie?
No.
Is it because you don't like pies? Because you don't like crust? Because you don't like biscuits? Because you're bad?
Yeah.
What about just the filling? Do you like pie filling?
I don't like nuts a lot, so I don't like pecans.
These nuts?
There it is.
These nuts. I have to get
Family
that in.
Show.
Do you know that there is a company. First of all, our bar manager, D, is making a drink, I think, with nuts, and it's going to be called D's Nuts. And there is a nut company, a legit nut company, out of Louisville, Kentucky, and I saw them on Twitter a couple weeks ago, and their thing is D's Nuts, because it's, you know, they're D, and they sell nuts.
Spelled D,
apostrophe S, nuts. Mm-hmm. So it's very similar, except for the Z. Of course, you know, whole groups of people enjoy using a Z instead of an S. Jack, I would imagine you might occasionally...
No, I'm not a Z guy.
Come on, Jack. Back in the day?
Yeah, sure.
When you were downloading programs, were they wares?
They were. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, what a reference. Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
wow.
Try to keep current on stuff from like 10 years past. I'm very current on what was going on 10 years ago. So, this is our first time back from Thanksgiving. So Stas actually had a question. I don't know if I was supposed to say it's from her or not, but this is the first time Nastasha's ever written a question.
That's
into
not
the...
true.
This is big.
That's
oh,
not true.
Well, maybe she wrote fake ones.
Questions before.
And just not told me?
Yeah.
Maybe you just ignored her.
Like,
who Nick's talking?
Oh, yeah. And Nastasha totally busted him. So here's the first that I know of question from Nastasha. When your friend is overcooking a turkey at his house, remember, can you tell him to take it out of the oven or give him any type of direction, especially if he thinks the turkey needs another hour?
This is an etiquette question.
Well, it's an etiquette question. We've answered etiquette questions before here on the radio, like regarding whether or not you're allowed to mess with people's tomatoes, and then we got Daniel in as a result. So here's the thing. First of all, It's a tough call. I think a lot depends on how much gravy they're making. How much gravy were they making?
A lot. Three boats worth.
Okay. And were they giving you sharp knives?
No.
Oh. Well, were there mashed potatoes?
Yeah.
So you could conceivably take each piece of shoe leather, slice it into tiny little niblets, surround the niblets with mashed potatoes, and then drench it in gravy and choke down one slice and you're out.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't have to deal with the leftovers because they're not in your kitchen, right? So it's not your sandwiches that he's ruining.
Right.
So I don't think you can say anything to him. I think maybe you can be like, I think you're allowed one of these. Shoulders go up, head goes aside a little bit. Yeah, maybe it's done. I think you're allowed one of those, you know? I think maybe it's done. Because, and then, like, if you're a really good friend, you're allowed to say, listen, you know that little bit of the meat near the thigh that you're worried about is not cooked? That's really not that big a deal. We can slice that off and just pan it later. Really, you don't want to overcook the whole breast and the thigh and the rest of the leg and stuff like that for the sake of that one little piece of meat down by the thigh that we all know, worst comes to worst, I just cut it off and throw it in the microwave for about a minute and a half, and that little nugget of meat is done. Right? Mm-hmm. No one ever gets down to that part of the turkey anyway.
True.
Except for in my house. Oh, yeah. But my point is that you're allowed to say. Then if they're like, then you, all right.
Yeah, that's it. Another hour.
And just, you know, although I heard you got busted because I asked you about this. I was like, well, the one good thing about a badly overcooked turkey is usually the skin's pretty good.
Right, but I didn't get any skin.
Do you know Johnny Hunter from the underground food and meats collective in Madison, Wisconsin? We visited a while ago. Great folks. He did the bionic turkey.
Mm-hmm.
Sweet. The bionic turkey lives on. Nick, if he was to ever speak, did that once with us, I think, or maybe twice. You did it with us twice or once?
I don't think
just
you did it.
Just once? You didn't come to do it at my house with me?
No.
You were in San Francisco at the time.
I think you brought it in to do this, to circulate at FCI, but...
No, anyway. So I've done the bionic turkey, I think, three times now. But Johnny did it, and it was awesome. So he posted on Twitter. So go look on Johnny Hunter's Twitter account for his bionic turkey, or I retweeted it if you have my Twitter at Cooking Issues. I did not do the bionic turkey this year because I wanted to go super simple this year for me, super simple. So what I did was I went to the Pollo Vivo place up 117th Street between like 1st and 2nd Avenue, picked out my live turkey. They didn't have the wild turkey of reasonable size this time, the guajolote style. They only had the little ones. And I wasn't going to feed all those people with like a 15-pound turkey live. That's like 12-pound turkey in the real life. That's like, it's like me. I can eat that. Anyway, so I got the live turkey, let it rest a day, right? I suggest people do this. This is the easy complicated way. This is the easiest complicated turkey I've ever done. Then, you know how when you teach you to bone out birds, you bone out, like you cut down the breast and you bone out so that you then roll it back up, but usually you don't cut down the back of the animal. You know what I'm saying, Nick?
Right. Yeah.
So anyway, so this one I boned out by cutting down the back of the turkey, ripped out the carcass, ripped out the thigh bones, left in the legs. Are you a believer in taking out the wishbone before you bone out a bird or not? Jackie Peeps, that's Jacques Pepin for all of you out there. Jackie Peeps always takes the wishbone out of the bird before he does the, which I think makes sense if you're going to carve the breast off of it, because then you don't lose that little bit like where your knife goes around. Nils never used to take the bone out. I can't decide whether I like taking the bone out or not. Now it's just a habit. You take the bone out or not?
I'm too lazy to take the bone out.
So you lose that little nugget of meat?
You can
put the knife in the other set, yeah?
You can kind of come at it with the knife in a different angle.
Yeah. My kids, for the first time this year, did the wishbone. Booker lost.
Aww.
Dax was super happy because Dax knows the grip up high and like yank hard trick and then snapped it off and left Booker with this little stub of wishbone. And Dax was like, yeah, like running around the house with the wishbone. I was like, you're not going to get, like, they both wish for crap they're not going to get. Neither of them were like, you know, I want, like, you know, a candy bar or some crap that, like, I might actually get them.
I bet Booker wanted something you're going to get for him for Christmas.
No, they both wanted, like, $1,000 a day
or
something, like, you know, something stupid that you're not going to get out of it. People need to, like, is it that I'm all for dreaming big, but don't dream stupid. You know what I mean?
What if he just wished to win the wishbone competition?
For next time, you mean? Or like a retroactive wish? You're like, you won as you pull it, you've won.
Exactly.
See, that's why I like Nick.
It's Nick's gratification.
Strong. Yeah, sweet. I love that. All right, done. Done. I won. Done. And granted. Won. Granted. Anyway. The simul win grant. I like that. So add the turkey. So now you have the bones. The great thing about boning out a turkey, I said this a billion times, say it one more time. You have the bones to make the stock. So you bone that sucker out, dry salt it, stick it in a Ziploc bag. Now the turkey fits in your fridge, no problem. No problem. In a Ziploc with no bones, big turkey fits in the fridge in the little crisper drawer. Anyways, salted, sitting overnight, take the bones, roast them off, bought extra bones because that's how I am. Made the stock in the pressure cooker, duh, Coon Recon, no venting. Let it come down. Then the next day when I made the – I injected the stock into the – I salted, took some of the stock, boiled it down, salted it up, injected the stock into the breast meat and the legs and stuff, not water, stock, then with a meat injector. Then made the stuffing plug, right, the giant stuffing plug, carcass-shaped stuffing plug. Circulated that at like 80 Celsius to heat the whole stuffing plug up, like sterilize it, you know, pasteurize it pretty quickly and heat it through. Then use that as an inside heater, drape the turkey around the stuffing plug, like basted boat ton of butter on it, and then threw it in the oven so it was cooking from both sides at once using the stuffing plug as my heat reservoir. Turkey. I was like 1.5, 2 hours done. And other advantage is because the skin is wrapped around the side, really you're cheating and you're putting the skin that is underneath right on the bottom at the outside. All the skin crisp. All the skin crisp. Crisp and delicious. Yeah. Anyway. As opposed to Stas's turkey and Jack's turkey. Did you have... Which they sucked. Nick, how is... actually, Jen liked this even better than Bionic Turkey. Mm. I don't know whether it's just because there wasn't the headache of me probably. Frying or what. I don't
probably.
Know.
Yeah. No, that's definitely yes. the reason.
Yeah. Nick, did you do a turkey?
I did not do a turkey.
What'd you do?
I went over to Mindy's place for Thanksgiving dinner.
Oh, Mindy, who ran the intern program for a long time. How was Mindy's turkey?
It was good.
Yeah? What'd she do?
Straight regular roast. I didn't have to tell her that it was overcooking because she knows better.
Right, then to that mean because she did, but she did not overcook it?
Nope.
Turkey was good?
Yes.
Gravy?
I made the gravy, so yes.
Was that you roasting bones in Son? And the day, a couple days before Thanksgiving, it smelled awesome like turkey stock in Son.
It's probably because we're making... boatloads of turkey gravy.
Strong. All right. So enough of Thanksgiving. I don't think I have any other Thanksgiving things to report. Anything else good or bad on Thanksgiving? Mm-hmm. Anything to report?
Is that the end?
Thanksgiving?
We can't talk about Thanksgiving now until next year.
We can talk about it, Jack. What do you want to talk about? You want to talk about Thanksgiving?
No, I got nothing.
Thanksgiving Thursday.
Right.
Yeah. So another thing I want to say. You guys seen the movie The Jerk?
No.
Yeah,
you seen The Jerk?
Yeah.
So Stas, for some reason, Nastasia likes to claim that she's never seen any movie prior to 1995. She's like, that's old. Meanwhile, I've seen movies from the 20s, 30s, teens. So especially any comedy movie in the 70s or 80s. She's like, no,
that's not true.
What's Stripes? Who's Bill Murray?
What? Blazing Saddles and Stripes. And
they're great movies.
I know,
and
I've seen them all.
Oh, you
I
have seen them.
I haven't seen The Jerk. I can't believe this. One of my favorite movies is Young Frankenstein, and
great
you
movie.
Know that.
It's a great movie.
I am really angry right now.
You sound it.
Because I feel like
I
you're
am
talking
enraged.
About
you sound like
else.
Mike Dukakis. Yeah. You sound
she
like Mike Dukakis.
She looks real angry, too.
Yeah. Anyways, but you haven't seen The Jerk?
No.
All right. So you'll enjoy this, Stas.
I'm going to go silent now, like Nick.
Nice. Fake silent? Imaginary silent?
For a change.
Yeah. Oh! Wow. Whoa! She just gave them... Oh, harsh. Anyways. So in The Jerk, and I'll tell you why I feel this way. Anastasia will enjoy this. In The Jerk, there's a famous section where... Steve Martin is the lead character in The Jerk, and he's an idiot. He's not just a jerk, he's an idiot, right? So at one point, he's working in a gas station, and the phone book comes, and he's like... The phone book, my name in print, the phone book, finally, like great stuff's gonna happen to me, my name's in print, I'm in the phone book. And the guy's like, what the hell, you're in the phone book. And then, literally the next scene is, a psycho sniper who opens the phone book at a random page and goes, Navin R. Johnson, typical bastard. And then, drives out in a truck and tries to kill Steve Martin at the gas station with, a sniper rifle, right? And so it's, classic, guy thinks he's getting somewhere... But really, it's stupid because who cares about where they're in the phone book? But that random thing does happen to shaft him in life. And so that's what I'm living right now with Amazon. So, what's happening with Amazon? So, I'm like, oh, we're in Amazon. My name's in the phone book. And, because we have the Sears All supposedly on sale. Amazon hosed us. How hard did it, which, by the way, Sears All is on sale on Amazon, right? But they are no one understands what the hell's going on. Whenever we have something going wrong with Amazon and the Sears All, everyone is like, it can't be Amazon. Amazon is a well-run large company, and it must be you guys who are incompetent and stupid. And I'm like,
No, you don't understand. People, right styles, people just don't get how
that's,
crazy.
That's my first instinct.
Well, that's also true. But like the fact of the matter is like, it's like, it, oh my God, I can't even get into it. Then, so Amazon hoses us and they say they're not going to sell the Sears Alls on Black Friday, even though we swore on a stack of Bibles that they were in stock, which they are. They were at Amazon's warehouse. Stas and I are up there at midnight, you know, Thanksgiving, like, well, she was, I don't know, what, an hour early or some crap, 11, because Ohio's on our time zone? Mm-hmm. Anyways, so she's like, she's there, and like, we're like, and what? And like, they wouldn't let us sell live. That was it. And like, people start, some idiots like, sent us in, like, oh, someone, they're asleep at the too much turkey. Meanwhile, Stas and I are up at like midnight, trying, like, they thought we fell asleep. And we're sitting there like, what the hell, what the hell? And Amazon, even though all of their customer service is not in the United States of America, maybe they have like five guys in Washington who are in the United States of America, right? But they have a boat ton of people who are customer service who have nothing to do with the United States of America, right? Yet those guys also get Thanksgiving off. What the hell is that about? No customer service on the Thanksgiving, trying to get the stuff selling.
By that time it was Black Friday, though, which you would think Amazon would be
on top of. Right? So they're like, well, you can't. And then, like, all of a sudden, Sears All gets flagged as a hazmat device, meaning that it's hazardous material because it uses the word torch, I guess, or gas or something in the text. So the computer, because they have some sort of, like, dumb NSA algorithm, like, searching it for, like, terror and hazmat crap, is like, yeah, this might be hazmat, so maybe we shouldn't sell this thing. So bang. And then it says, could take maybe 48 hours for us to look at it. Maybe longer. So we're like, what the what? Remember this? Mm-hmm. So I get a guy on the phone at 8 when they opened up in the next morning. And he's like, yeah, you're pretty much shafted. He's like, you have one option. He's like, I was like, they're all in your warehouse. He's like, yeah, so here's what we're going to do. We're going to put it on sale on the Amazon website, but really you're selling it, not us. I was like, what? He's like, yeah, you're selling it, not us. I'm like, what does that mean? He's like, well, it means that you have to ship it. I was like, yeah, but you have all of our Sears Alls. And the guy's like, yeah, I know. So what then you'll have to do is you'll then have to make your own separate order to ship out from our warehouse as your own self to these customers. So we're like, I was like, what? I was like, then if you're gonna accept an order and then you're going to let me ship the order from your warehouse, why don't you just take the order and ship the order? And they're like, No. And there is no – this is what people aren't going to believe. They're not going to believe this. There is no way on the computer to say, hey, Amazon, this chunk of 300 orders that you got in, right, this chunk, right, like, really those are your orders. Can you just ship them out and track them? No. And when we use Amazon to ship – I'm sorry this is boring people, but I have to get it off my chest. When you use Amazon to ship as we're a seller – they don't guarantee they're going to ship it out in a reasonable amount of time, even when you pay expediting, which I did for all of the Sears Alls that got ordered. I paid the extra expediting. I got totally hosed because I didn't want people to not have it prime speed, right? They don't guarantee that. However, the orders that they took in your name and gave to you, they expect to get out in a reasonable amount of time, and you get dinged if you don't get them out. What? What? I hate them. And then in the middle of this, and this is where the jerk really came to my mind in the phone book. They also ran out of stock on Liquid Intelligence for no reason. Even though I called my publisher and it's been sitting in the warehouse waiting for their pickup for like a week and a half, they had copies of Liquid Intelligence.
Oh, did they not get an interview? Was that the thing? They didn't do the interview thing?
They're a publisher. They should know how to get a book to the whatever. Anyway, so yeah, for some reason, like I got randomly selected in the phone book for like singling out by Amazon.com. I'm Bezos' random whipping boy of the day. Enough of that. So anyways, we got some questions in other than Nastasha's turkey question. So I'm going to do in reverse. Crap on that. I'm not going to do yet last week's now because they're not on my phone now. I'm going to do this week's, and then I'm going to go back.
I like the first question.
You like the first question? All right, so I'll do it. So now you get to know what Nastasha likes because she apparently likes this question. From Jeff Moore in Jersey City. Let's hear it, Jersey. Anything for Jersey? No love for Jersey City? Jack, any love for Jersey City? Jesus.
Wow.
He's like, won't even pick up the mic for Jersey City. I think maybe he's in the bathroom.
No, I'm here.
Oh, there's no love for Jersey City. I'm going to give some love out to Jersey City. Why? What's all the hate on Jersey City?
What's the love?
Wow. Damn. All right. I've been enjoying the Liquid Intelligence book, but I was wondering... Oh, this is why. Stas, you're such an evil person. This is going to give an idea of how evil Nastasia is, people. She just loves to break them. Like she loves to break them. If she had them, she would break her own because she loves to break them so much. I've been enjoying the Liquid Intelligence book, but I was wondering if there's a published errata list so I can mark up my book with any corrections which have accumulated so far. I haven't been able to find one at the publisher site or at cookingissues.com, nor have my attempts at Google Foo found it. Google Foo, that she used to work at Soundbar and at PDT. Karen Foo is her name, not Google Foo, but now Google Foo is her name. Found it for me. Thanks, and keep doing what you do, Jeff Moore. All right, Stas, you evil person, you. only likes it. You remember that song? Remember that group, Garbage? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm only happy when it rains.
It's a good song.
Yeah, that is Nastasia. That is Nastasia. She's only happy when it's complicated, you know? You know, she feels so good, feels so bad. She's only happy when it rains.
So what was the question again?
published errata. Okay, there is not. I am thinking of printing up a sheet, though, to carry around with me and maybe give it to the publisher. So the basic – there's nothing – the only thing in there that I know of that actually would affect a recipe is in the Manhattans for two – the vermouth is written down as a fat 3/4 of an ounce, and I think it's a fat 1 3/4, I think, is the thing. I have to look at exactly what the thing is, but the milliliter number is right. So if you follow the milliliter number there, but go look at the Manhattans for two, and that number is wrong. The other main issues that I found is that in the classics cocktail section at the end with the where you have the chart of all the things, the acid numbers got messed up in the befores, but not in the afters. So it's not going to affect the recipes, except for the vermouth listing in the double Manhattan experiments. I haven't seen any like errata that actually mess up the recipes. I will say in the reprint, I'm probably going to lower the frozen daiquiris. I'm going to lower the lime juice a little bit, little bits. In retrospect, I might lower it a little bits.
So there's nowhere he can go.
I just gave it to him. If he's listening, I just gave him the answer. And so, then, like, in the next one, it's like, there's no printed sheet yet. Oh, you know what? I think you should call Nastasia. I'll give her your cell number over the next radio program, and you can call her for the errata list. How about that? Does that sound, Nick, sound like a good idea?
That's a great idea.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll give you a hint. It's in California, so it's like she still has like she still has this first cell phone she got when she was like 12 from Covina, California. She still has the area code. My first cell phone was in New York City, so I still have like an honest to God New York City cell phone and have since. You know what Booker actually wants? A 3-4 whatever it is instead of he has a 9-1 he has a 9-1-7.
I have a 212.
Yeah, on your cell phone.
On my cell.
How the hell did you do that?
Some place in Queens.
Like, what do you mean? It's like you go there and you're like, yo, give me the 212.
I was young. I don't know. They were just like, you want 212? And I was like, yeah, I'll take it.
Of course you do. You can pretend to be Manhattan forever.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyways.
Also, I've never been to Jersey City, really. I'm sure it's a great place.
Have you been to the Hoboken?
Not really. I don't spend much time in Jersey.
I had to go to Hoboken. Mozzarella is great there, by the way. Have we talked about that on the show? Yeah, mozzarella there is great and worth going to. Read anything that Josh Ozersky wrote about mozzarella and to find suggestions there. But the only real time I've spent there other than that was back when I used to work at the lawyer's office. This is how little work that we did. This is before Powerball was in New York. They literally put me on a train to go buy the office's Powerball tickets in Hoboken.
Wow.
Keep in mind, I was their computer consultant. So I was like theoretically making a decent wage, you know, much more decent than I have made since. And yet I was put on a train over to Hoboken to buy lottery tickets. We didn't win, which we didn't win. I don't know where that fact. Okay.
Can we take our 60-second spot very quickly so we have more time?
All right.
Yeah. Okay, here we go.
It is so exciting to have this new medium.
Hosting After the Jump has been a huge part of me transitioning from being a blogger to somebody who has sort of real important conversations with people in real life.
My show, I kind of describe it as an audio trade magazine.
I learn a ton from the guests every week, whether it's restaurants, bars.
All the hosts at Heritage all come from different perspectives.
Everyone should be listening to this. If you're interested in conservation and practical approach to renewable food sources, you know, not this big industry.
Whether it's history, laws, social policies of food, I think people now take food seriously, and hopefully what's on their plate will become something very special.
And I feel that podcasting has a future. Giving people information in a format they can really use on the go.
We need your support to keep these conversations going. To donate, visit heritageradionetwork.org/donate.
We need your support. Give us your support. Right?
Yeah, that was it.
Support. That's you don't talk like that, though. See, like, you can never judge what someone actually sounds like based on my imitation. Because that's my, like, 80-year-old lady from, like, the outer boroughs.
And your Jack Inslee impression?
Yeah, well, I don't know. I just, like, no, it's like, I don't know. No, my normal Jack impression is using my normal voice. I don't really have a you. I don't have, like, you sound normal to me, so I don't have, like, a real impression for you.
Thanks. Know? Well, it's Giving Tuesday, so if any Cooking Issues listeners want to donate, that would be awesome. Show your support if you like the show.
Is tomorrow Giving Wednesday?
No, actually, Nick decided what tomorrow was.
What's tomorrow?
You can't say it.
I can't say it.
Oh, can't say it on the radio.
Oh.
It's SE Wednesday.
SA Wednesday?
No, S not SA. No. S.
We can come up with another word, maybe.
-Y Wednesday.
I don't know. I don't even. I'm too. You'll tell me afterwards. I'll okay. By the way, I know what I forgot to talk about, people. WD-50 closed. I went on Sunday to the final meal, and they had like a family meal party yesterday. They'd already taken down the neon sign. End of an era. End. Yeah, sad. But he's ending on a high. Like at first, I was like, you know, because I talked to some people about it. I was like, oh, well, he's ending on a really high note. There's no better reason to have to end a restaurant than they're going to knock the building down and they paid you, you know, money to get out. You know what I mean? They're like, they paid you a bunch of money to give up a successful business so they could knock the building down and build like an ugly, stupid high rise, right? It's about the best way to leave a restaurant. But still when you're there and then you were like, oh my God, it's a restaurant. Like all these people now need to find new jobs. I spoke to a lot of people and like, you know, I think a lot of the folks there have, found other good places to go, but you know, I hope they all have wish everyone from WD, good future. Great restaurant, end of an era. Okay. Hello, Dave and Hammer, emailing you live from Putin's new Byzantium, Moscow, Russia. Do they have, like imagine, like, they should have announcing like that over there, do they?
I don't know.
I'm not going to do it in my Russian accent, though. I have an okay fake Russian accent. Anyway, congrats on the new, well, he's not, the guy's writing's not Russian, though. He's English. Anyway, AD is his name. Congratulations on the book. As I read it, I can hear Dave's disembodied voice in my head, which worries this Englishman. Yeah, right. It worries Nick, too. Nick's got like a Dave voice face, which is similar to Anastasia's vegan face on right now. You've reignited my need for a fuge. That's centrifuge, to those of you not in the know. On this post below, you mentioned that the size of the Zhuan 3-liter rotor affects the G's pulled versus the lighter Champion E-34. So the E-34, I thought it was the E-33, but maybe it's E-34 now. You know, things get better. So the deal is both of them, I think actually our Zhuan goes at around 4,000 RPM, and the little guy goes at like 3,000 and change because it's run off of an induction motor, and that's just the speed that it runs. So here's the deal. Like, you can't – the rotor size does make it – well, let me finish your question. However, how can I or where can I look up and work out what a 1.2-liter 4,000 RPM Zhuan benchtop fuge does? Is there a simple equation between mass, RPM, and time that I need to know? Well, mass doesn't matter. Mass irrelevant. The only things you need to know are the radius of your rotor and the speed at which the rotor goes in RPM. And yeah, you look up just look up on the Wikipedia RCF. That's R like Richard, C like C, F like F, and it stands for relative centrifugal force. And basically, you need to know the mean rotor, whatever they're going to take is the rotor diameter or radius, depending. You have to look at it, usually in millimeters, and then the speed in RPMs, and it'll calculate the relative centrifugal force for you. And there's like JavaScript calculators all over everywhere because this is stuff that people have to do every day. So then you just need to know the radius of your rotor, which is easily findable on any one of the websites and the thing. But here's what I'm here to tell you. Well, for a given bucket, for a given rotor, the speed of the centrifuge is super important because it's the number of G's that are going to determine what the separating power of the centrifuge is. However, it's not the only number that's important. So on a spinning bucket rotor, right, you need a relative, which is what we have with the Zhuan, with the big one that I use, you need a relatively high number of G's, not to clarify, right, you need a relatively high number of G's to compact all of the crap into the bottom of the bucket and have it so that when the centrifuge stops, it doesn't refloat up back into the stuff. That's what you need all the extra G's for over the first, like, you know, 2,000, right? The extra 2,000 G's that you need in that are really just to smash the pellet tough so that it doesn't resuspend when you spin down. And that's also why you need to spin it for like 10, 15 minutes and not for 5 minutes, because the stuff is really clear inside of like 3 to 5 minutes, but it's just not densely packed in the bottom. Now, like how well it packs is dependent upon a couple of things. One is the speed of the centrifuge, the amount of G forces it has, but also how far the particles need to travel through the liquid before they smash. And for a spinning bucket rotor, they need to travel a relatively long distance, and they're getting forced directly into a big flat plate, so they need a relatively large amount of force to smash them down into a pellet, into a puck. In a fixed angle rotor where the sides of the rotor are at an angle and the liquid hits them and then the particles hit the sides and then slide down, those things kind of grind the particles into a pellet faster, and so they can work with lower G's. So a fixed angle rotor is going to give you easier clarification at lower G's than a swinging bucket, but the swinging bucket's typically going to have a higher capacity. Does that make any sense? Yeah, hope that helps. iPhone thinks I want to take a picture instead of helping you guys with your questions. It's wrong. Okay, that's it for this. We're going to go on to last week's questions, which I'm going to call up. You want to say anything, Nick, while I'm looking up last week's questions? The answer better be yes, or I'm going to do terrible things to your pizza. Just terrible things. Nothing. You're a bad person. You're never invited on the radio program again. Never. Okay. So, the last question we asked was the pretzel one, right? Did we talk about tempeh last week or 2 weeks ago?
Yeah, we did.
All right. And we talked about maybe we got everything.
I doubt it.
No, it's like I know we missed a whole bunch. Oh, I know what happened. They never made it onto Dropbox. I had to send them into the email thing. All right, people. I apologize. And since Nick is such a low quality human being, you know what? Before we came on, when I came in late because of my bike, he thinks it's freaking hilarious. I'm gonna hit him with a lead pipe as soon as this is over. But he was telling all kinds of stories back from the.
It's true.
Yeah. All kinds of stories about me hitting him with lead pipes, how much I could hit him, wish I could hit him with a lead pipe. All right, here we go. Okay, so we got the lemon sorbet question, and we got the ramen, we got the salt, we got the tempeh. We did not get to freezing, right? Did we? Did we talk about freezing?
Depends on what it is about.
The gin and juice with the freezing?
No.
Okay. Another Dave here from the UK. Love your show. Only stumbled across it a few months ago and wish I'd found it years ago. I've been working through the archives, and they make great listening whilst I'm pottering about in the kitchen. Pottering. I never heard that in a long time. What do you think, Stas? You pro?
No.
Pro? Maybe. Not pro pottering?
No. Puttering. I'm sure puttering? Whilst maybe he's puttering.
Well, I know. Maybe it's in the UK. I don't know. Maybe you potter in the UK.
Maybe you potter.
I don't know. I don't spend much time over there. I've already heard a ton of useful information, but he spells the English ton. Are you for the English ton? Two N's and an E?
No.
No?
No.
All right. Of useful information from listening to you, which inspires me to try new things in the kitchen. I feel I've learned so much that I thought I'd better do the decent thing and help support the show. So I signed up and became a Heritage Radio Network member the other week.
Woo.
Keep up the good work. Sweet. This is from Dave W. I have a quick question. I bought your book and started off by making a gin and juice. I wrote a blog post about it. I saw that, actually. You said what you obviously saw is you made a comment on it. Thank you. So the agar clarification process for the grapefruit is very straightforward and works very well, but it takes about 3 days. That's not really helpful if you suddenly have an urge for a spontaneous cocktail. I was wondering if I can make up a larger batch of clarified juice and freeze it in smaller portions, enough for a couple of drinks. How well would it keep in the freezer? Would it lose anything over time? It's already been frozen once during the process, so I figure it's worth trying. I just wondered if you had an opinion. Thanks, Dave W. Yeah, you could totally freeze it. So grapefruit juice freezes quite well. Clarified grapefruit juice freezes quite well. Clarified apple juice freezes quite well. Clarified lime and lemon juice, no, not so much. They still taste like poison. Not as much. You know, I did a study of pre-mixed drinks that were frozen for a long time versus kept at room temperature, and the room temperature ones did taste more poisonous with the lemon and lime juice in them than the one in the freezer, but the one in the freezer still tasted poisonous to me. you know what I'm saying when I'm saying poisonous, right? Like, not actually like poison, but you know that like poisonous taste, that detergent poisonous, like real lemon, like fake, like crap hole, like 70s supermarket flavor.
Mm-hmm.
Familiar with it?
Mm-hmm.
You might know it from such things as like the skinny, like margarita, that skinny, like lady margarita, like her. That tastes like poison to me. You ever had one of those things? Poisonous. Yes. They taste poisonous, right?
Why have you had one of those?
We've done events where it's there, and then they made. Remember, we went to an event, and they made you drink, and they used like stuff like that.
Yeah, oh my god, no! Remember, we threw it away, and we had to go get new. And I've had also. I remember we were at one of these shows. I think it was called the Fancy Food Show. I think it was that one in Javits. And this person's like, I make you know frozen lime juice concentrate lime juice, and I was like, I hate it. He's like, no, ours is really good. I'm like, but buddy. I hate it. Like he's like, no, try it. I'm like, okay. And the best I could give him was, it's not as terrible as the rest of the poisonous stuff that I'm used to tasting. Which is true. Actually, this is strange. You know how I think limoncello tastes poisonous? I actually had a really good limoncello the other day.
Nice.
I'm going to be using it at Tales of the Cocktail. It's at the bar. Do you like limoncello?
Depends if it's really good. Yeah,
doesn't most of it taste like poison? Like detergent? Like Pledge?
Mm-hmm.
Nick feels the same way. What about Jack? You a limoncello guy?
Yeah, it's either that pledgy taste or like too sweet. It's hard to find in between.
I like it when it's got both the lemon pledge flavor and the too sweet.
Yeah.
That's the best. I don't know what the hell I was talking about that. So yeah, those things taste like poison. So don't do that. But grapefruit juice, all that stuff is fine. What I would do is if you're going to freeze it, there's a couple ways to freeze it. Ziploc bag, freezer Ziploc bags. If you put like however much you want, and then lay them flat on, lay them like close them like you were going to bag a steak for a low temp. Put your finger in it, and then like let the air out slowly on a flat counter. Pinch it at the end so there's no air bubbles in it, and then just put them on a sheet tray in your freezer until they freeze in a flat configuration. That's the best way. And then you can like stack a lot of them in the freezer. You don't have to worry about it. And they freeze relatively quickly. And because they're flat, they unfreeze relatively quickly, which is also good. And if you're in a good Ziploc bag like that, you can throw it into a pan of water and just run warm water on it and thaw it out without like overheating or anything super quickly. If you freeze it in quart containers, it takes forever for them to thaw out, and it's a huge pain in the butt. And plus, also, when you drop a frozen quart container, it cracks. And there's always like here's what always happens: you pull it out of the freezer, you drop it a little bit, or it cracks, or someone throws something into the freezer and it cracks the quart container. You pull the quart container out, you don't know it's cracked until it starts thawing, and the stuff starts leaking out all everywhere. Here's the real problem with that. Not only that, but the stuff that thaws out first is all the sugar and flavor. And so all the sugar and flavor leach out, and you're left with a crappy ice cube. And then you're still going to try and use it for a drink because it's all you've got, and you feel bad because you wasted all this product you spent all this time on. So what I'm telling you is don't use the quart container. Another alternative, if you know you're only going to make a really like couple of drinks at a time, it's not as ideal from a storage standpoint, but you freeze the stuff down in ice cube trays. They're never going to get as firm as a real ice cube because of the sugar and whatnot. But then pop them. Don't leave them in the ice cube trays. That's a rookie move. Pop them out of the ice cube trays. Put them in a Ziploc container in the fridge, and then you can pull them out cube by cube. Just make sure you measure beforehand the volume of your ice cube trays so you know how much juice is in each cube. And you'll find that if you're decent at it, like you know, your cubes are going to be pretty accurate to within like you know, way less than a quarter of an ounce per cube. And so you'll be able to accurately judge how much juice you're going to add just by throwing a certain number of cubes in. And then you can do stuff like the juice shake from the book. Anyway, whatever.
What if you want to use a liter container?
Instead of a – because he's English? Hardy, hardy. Actually, in fact, you know, I found out that most people all over the world don't have quart containers. Like even – when I say most people all over the world, like San Francisco doesn't use quart containers. They find them to be ungreen.
That's a lie.
Oh, maybe at Encanto they used them, but how many restaurants did you go to that you, like your friends you went to, and you're like, where's the quart container? And they're like, what is that? Is it green and made of bamboo? Right? Come on now. We worked a bunch of events at Staz in San Francisco, and we could never get freaking quart containers over there. I think they're green because you use them over and over and over again. I've had the same quart containers for years. Do you find them to be bad for the environment?
If you don't throw them away.
Yeah, they're fine. They're fine, right? Yeah. All right. Anyways. Liter containers. So they don't have.
He wrote ton with a two N's and an E.
So what about the what size Ziploc bags do they have over there? A 4-liter Ziploc?
Yeah.
Instead of a gallon?
A liter bag.
Yeah, but what, like a gallon bag is the one we use. That's the baller size. So what are those? 4 liters? A 2-liter bag? 4-liter bag? What do they have? We don't even have a 2-liter bag here. Okay. Did we do the thing on clarification? No, I don't think so. Jesper called in about clarification. I know you have a backlog already, which I heard in the last episode. Had some questions in regards to the Liquid Intelligence book, which I've had for 3 weeks and 3 weeks and enjoy, so now like 5 weeks. But I will anyway push you some more questions into the FIFO list. I understand there's some known typos. All right, we took care of this one. I'm not going to get into that one again. Not going to get into that again. Not going to get into it. Not going to happen.
Love it.
Oh, Stas, you're so evil. You know, Stas won't read the book, which I don't blame her, by the way, because she has to work with me every day. But here's what she said. I don't even consider it a book.
I actually used it on Sunday as a separator.
A separator of what?
Between two hot things to carry to somebody.
Oh, man. Wow.
Wow. Yeah. She can't even look at it as a book. It's like an object. It does contain words. Like, she, like, will admit that, like, there are words. So, you know. My name's in the phone book. Okay. My main question, which I guess you may be tired of, is on the topic of clarifying lime juice. I followed the steps in the book but could not identify any noticeable differences between the steps that you're doing, I guess, apart from the last one after I ran the centrifuge. My question, by the way, so my lime clarification, the way it works in the centrifuge is you juice the limes, you add enzyme, and you add something called kieselsol to it, which is suspended silicosol. You wait 15, and what that's doing is the enzyme is breaking down the pectin. It's called pectinex ultra SPL, but you can't use it by itself because the lime juice is too acidic. So at the same time, you add kieselsol, which is a charged silicosol. It attracts the charged particles in it, which a lot of the turbid particles are. Most of them are. All of them are. Attracts it to it. Nick was trying to say that I'm a turbid particle, which is true. Attracts it to it. Then you add the then you wait 15 minutes for that reaction. Then you add the kieselsol, the chitosan, which is the opposite charge, and it gloms them together again. Wait 15 minutes. Add the kieselsol again. Re-glom and spin. So that's what it is. Anyway, after you add the kieselsol the second time, so this is the last step, how long should you wait prior to running the fuge? 15 minutes in the previous steps? I'm adding that question. In the previous steps? Or can you go ahead and run the fuge immediately as implicitly implied in the book? You can pretty much run it immediately. Like, you know, I would wait a couple minutes, but you could pretty much run it right away. My centrifuge has cooling. What temperature do you recommend when spinning? Run it as cold as you can, but not without freezing it. Like, I run it at, you know, zero or, like, four. I think we keep ours at, like, four. When the refrigerator is working, that is. We keep it at four. Should the final clarified juice, apart from being transparent, also be colorless? No. No, no, no. Clarified strawberry juice is bright red, thank God. Imagine if, like, your strawberry... Remember, so, like, the Rocas, right? Like, Juan Roca, Jordi Roca, those guys, and El Clar Ken Roca, like, they used to do clear desserts where they would actually rotovap things and make them colorless because they were doing distillation. Distillation is the only real way, I mean, other than, like, you know, stripping color with charcoal, to make something... Because that's how they do it with rum, by the way. With, you know, they age rum and then they strip the color out with the charcoal. Don't care. So usually, like, that's the only way to get rid of color. So, like, remember that clear is different from colorless. So, like, strawberry juice, if you can read a newspaper through it, it's clarified. But the newsprint's not necessarily going to – I mean, it's not necessarily going to look white. You know what I mean? It's gonna look like the color. So lime juice should be kind of like a – very light green. Very light green. Anyway, thanks for the program and support. Jesper from Sweden. Okay, and we have some more cocktail questions. What?
Just so you know, we're running out of time. Yep.
Okay, so we will get to the Regency Punch question on the next time. I have a whole bunch on Regency Punch. So whoever wrote in on fat washing and Regency Punch... I think it's BJD. We'll get to you next time on Cooking Issues.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us with questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.